away so long, he's forgotten his name. Left it in a heart somewhere, no one to remind him. Told it to a stranger, she took it away. There comes a time when you understand.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of American Exposé. Darren Weeks here with you on May 20th, 2005, and I'll be your host for the next hour as we explore our country and the crisis that we face, the undermining of our national sovereignty with the United Nations system being put into place, and a lot of secretive things going on with the government. I'm glad you're joining us. I hope you'll stay with us. I got a lot of information to cover in this hour. So much here. I have a lot of conservation news. The federal government is putting roads off limit in the West with the rewilding project. A lot of information to cover tonight, folks, so I want to get right to it. First of all, I have kind of an odd story. Now, some of you might remember back in the 70s and 80s, they had a lot of cases of cow mutilation going on in the 70s and 80s, and some were speculating that they were E.T. had come down and these beings were butchering cattle. Well, as it turns out, of course, it wasn't aliens from outer space butchering these cattle. It was human beings, and there's a recent story here. Channel 7 in New Mexico, and this is on a website called the NewMexicoChannel.com, and it's headlined, "Cow Mutilation Investigator Says Truth Is Out There." Now, apparently this guy has been investigating this for 30 years, and he says, "I finally figured it out," and, well, it was human researchers that were doing this. It was not Martians or anything else like that. But he does not want to talk about it, which leads to the question, who are these researchers and for what purpose are they doing this? Or were they doing this? This story is datelined to Albuquerque, New Mexico. It says human researchers, not Martians, likely mysteriously mutilated cattle in the Southwest during the 1970s and 80s. That is what retired police officer tells, a retired police officer tells Channel 7 Action News. He would like to say more, but he says the topic is too, quote, sensitive. He says it's solved. I know who did it, Gabe Valdez said, a retired New Mexico State Police officer. He says, I don't want to go on too much because it's too sensitive. The research that we're doing. He says it's humans, not UFOs or satanic groups or people from Mars. It was humans, Valdez said. It's taken me 30 years to figure it out. It has been solved as far as I'm concerned. Valdez said he believes that researchers carried out the acts using helicopters. He won't offer any clues as to who specifically killed the cattle. Action 7 News has spent many years covering the unsolved mutilations. In past interviews, witnesses described finding dead and mutilated cows in pastures, often missing tongues, lips, and ears. In one case, a witness described how a surgical passage had been cut through a cow's rectum to remove all its insides. In another case, a bull was found to have had all of its reproductive organs removed. In all the cases, there were no signs of gunshots or of animals tracking down and killing the cows. That's what led some conspiracy theorists to promote the idea that perhaps a satanic cult or even a mysterious space visitors had caused this. The owners of the ranch where the bull was found also said they received threatening phone calls. Their dog also disappeared. By 1985, the rancher had sold all his cattle and got out of the business. So, there you have another mystery. Who are these researchers? Assuming this guy is right, and I have no reason to doubt him. Who were these researchers? What were they doing? and using helicopters. You know, it just gets weirder and weirder. You know, the technology that our government has that they're not telling us about, it's just, I think it would boggle your mind if you knew half of it. And yet, we have crop circles in certain places. And this is being blamed on UFOs or some alien species from out of this world. And certainly the UFO issue has been being built up for many, many years. And I've documented on past broadcasts, both this one and Sweet Liberty with Jackie Petru, how the scientific ability is there to create an artificial simulated UFO attack on the Earth when and if the time comes that they want to do that. And for what purpose would they do that? Well, to merge all the countries together. Because if people know there's a crisis, then people know that we have to solve the problem, whatever means possible. And if national sovereignty is standing in the way of that, if governments are standing in the way, well, then we need to have a single global authority, don't we? No, we don't. But that's the argument that they're going to make. So just to give you that heads up again, as we have to do every once in a while, because, ladies and gentlemen, we don't know when our communications are going to be cut. We don't know how long we have to do this. And I just want to keep that thought in your mind that if they ever say that we're under attack by aliens, then you need to understand that more than likely, it's a lie. Apparently, some other news, somebody out of London, some college student out of London has developed now an insole for the shoe that's supposed to monitor the amount of TV a child watches. And only allow them to watch TV a certain period of time based on the exercise that they do. Yeah, this is from London, England. A London-based student has designed a shoe insole that can monitor and control how much television a child watches based on how much exercise they do in a day. The Square Eyes insole has two small buttons, one that tracks how many steps a child has traveled and one that converts it into television watching credits. The more the child exercises, the more time they can spend watching TV. And he says the main aim of the device is to combat child obesity. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I got a perfect solution for childhood obesity. As they say, it's becoming an incredible problem, both in the UK and the US. Now, you want to know what my solution to childhood obesity is? It's called parenting. Yeah, you know, parents need to stand up and turn off the TV and say, Hey, go outside and play. It's a nice day. Go outside. That's my solution to childhood obesity. But see, the problem is parents aren't being parents anymore. Children are largely raising themselves. You got both parents working outside the home now just to be able to pay the taxes. And consequently, who's raising the children? You know, but we still have control over the TV set to some degree. And when you're at home, a good babysitter for your children is not the television. And by the way, you know, my youngest daughter loves to watch cartoons. And she's always coming to me asking me if she can watch cartoons. And sometimes I'll let her reluctantly. But more and more I've been encouraging her to, you know, why don't you go practice piano or why don't you go do something else? You know, I try to point her in a direction, and you don't want to say no all the time. But ladies and gentlemen, as I've watched these cartoons at times when she's watching them, more and more they're working environmental propaganda into these cartoons. I mean, the things that they put in these shows for the consumption of children, well, it's on par with the public education system. The conditioning that's going on with the next generation. And that alone ought to be enough to make you want to turn the TV off and leave it off. But childhood obesity? It's up to the parents to say, hey, it's time for you to go outside and get some exercise. You know, that's a perfect cure for that problem. Now, moving along here, we see that there's a border vigil plan for California. Apparently, the Minutemen are organizing this, expanding on what they've done in Arizona. This is from the Washington Times. Minutemen organizer James T. Gilchrist, whose 850 volunteers shut down the flow of illegal aliens along a 23-mile section of Arizona and Mexico border last month, has joined forces with another citizens group to help organize a new border vigil in California beginning in August. The Minuteman Project has reached an agreement with the Friends of the Border Patrol, or FBP, to help promote a new border watch aimed at assisting U.S. Border Patrol agents in apprehending illegal aliens on the California border near San Diego. FBP Chairman Andy Ramirez said more than 500 volunteers have signed up to patrol areas of the California-Mexico border in August, including former Border Patrol agents, retired police and military personnel, and pilots. He said yesterday, and this is dated May 19th, he said that at least 2,000 more applications from volunteers nationwide are still being reviewed. The California vigil will kick off an effort by the Minuteman Project to link anti-illegal immigration groups nationwide and create a network of civilian volunteers along the nation's borders, according to Gilchrist, who lives in Aliso Viejo, California. And I apologize, I probably butchered the name of that town. Here's the point here with this, and they quote him and they say, he says, we did in our first 10 days what the federal government and Congress couldn't do over the past 10 years. And the point I want to make is that statement implies that the government, well, they couldn't do it. Sure they could have. The point is that under NAFTA, the agenda is in place. They're not going to do it. The agenda is to eliminate the border. And I admire the good work that these people are doing. Their intentions are well, I'm sure. I'm not trying to detract from what they're trying to do. I think they have done some good. They've certainly raised awareness about the problem that we have at the border, and they're trying to do something on a grassroots level about it. But I'm afraid, without expanding, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be doing this either, because the way they're handling themselves, they're trying to be very wise about it to avoid incidents, and they, you know, vigilante people who get involved with these things, because a lot of times these movements are magnets for nutcases, you know, who flock over there to try to, you know, and end up giving the whole situation a bad name. They've been trying to be very careful to avoid that kind of thing. But the point is, they're doing some good, but they need to broaden their scope to realize and address the whole problem. You got to get to the root of the problem when you're dealing with the border issue. And dealing with the border issue, you have the U.S.-Mexican Border 2012 program. And you can read about that on the Environmental Protection Agency website at www.epa.gov/US-Mexico border. www.epa.gov/US-Mexico border. And it's the US-Mexico Border 2012 framework. And they say their mission, they say, as a result of the partnership among federal, state, and local governments in the United States and Mexico, and with U.S. border tribes, the mission of the Border 2012 program is to protect the environment and public health in the U.S.-Mexico border region consistent with the principles of sustainable development. So you have the United Nations system of governance, Agenda 21, being implemented at the border. And they say, in this program, sustainable development is defined as conservation-oriented social and economic development that emphasizes the protection and sustainable use of resources while addressing both current and future needs and present and future impacts of human actions. So, affordable housing will be and is being implemented at the border. These human settlements will take place as Mexicans come across the borders. They will be having affordable housing there waiting for them, I'm sure. But the point is under NAFTA, these people crossing the border are migrants. And as the Central American Free Trade Agreement is implemented, we're going to have migrants from Central America coming to this country as well. So the border issue is slated to get worse. It's not as this guy in this article says, that he says we did in our first 10 days what the federal government and Congress couldn't do over the past 10 years. Well, it's not that they couldn't do it. It's that the agenda is that they won't do it. And you have to get to the root of that problem. So I'm not taking away from what these people are doing. I think it's commendable what they're doing. In fact, these people are heroes. But they need to expand and broaden their scope, in my opinion, to address the whole issue and get at the root of the problem, and that is the United Nations system. Now, moving along here, we see from the BBC News, U.S. rejects ban on women in combat. As the military gets more and more desperate, Republicans in the U.S. Congress have ditched a flat ban on women in combat. The House Armed Services Committee watered down proposals which would stop women from serving in support teams which back up frontline combat troops. Advocates of the plan say the women get too close to the fighting, but the U.S. Army, facing problems with recruitment, was opposed to the move. Senior officials said they would have had to pull 22,000 female soldiers out of their jobs to replace them with men. They also warned of damage to morale, with the Army's Vice Chief of Staff saying in a letter that the plan would cause confusion in the ranks. Women who serve in the U.S. military are barred from fighting on the front line under rules drawn up by the Pentagon a decade ago, but in Iraq, the U.S. is fighting an insurgency, which means there is no front line. About 9,000 women are serving in Iraq, and 35 have already been killed. Yeah, see, the women's movement which caused women to be in the military in the first place, you know, this whole equal rights thing, it's really done women so much good, hasn't it? I mean, here's 35 women right now that have been directly killed because of this so-called equal rights. Am I against women? Am I a chauvinist? Absolutely not. But there are places that women see equal rights, the whole feminist movement, there are parts of the women's movement that are good. If women do equal work, sure, they should be compensated fairly. That's just common sense. But this taking away of the traditional role of women, and this idea that women and men should be equal in every capacity, is a load of garbage. And it's causing the victimization of women in America, and it's causing the decline of the youthful population as well. As we were dealing earlier with the obesity problem, and here's another thing about the obesity problem. I mean, how many of these additives are being added to the food, this processed food that we're eating, which is causing people to blow up, which is causing people to get fat? And back when we had a traditional family, where the man was the breadwinner, the woman was, you know, the mother, she got to stay home and take care of the family. Well, we had meals cooked. We had real ingredients going into food. What do we have nowadays, ladies and gentlemen? Women have been largely victimized, in my opinion. And I think these 35 have been killed in Iraq, and how do we know that the number isn't even higher than that? But that spells it out. They say combat can happen anywhere at any time, and women have frequently been caught up in it. Republican committee members wanted to pass a measure which would keep women out of units, forward support companies in the Army, closing off jobs which provide maintenance, medical services, or supplies to the front line. The Army is deeply opposed to the measure, however. Underlying the Army's opposition are the problems it is having recruiting new troops. For the last 3 months, the Army has failed to meet its recruitment targets, And at the moment, it looks like it's going to miss its annual target by 15%. So they become more stretched. They need all the warm bodies they have, including the females. But folks, here's my point about all of this. A nation, a people that doesn't stand up, they don't stand up to protect their women and children, is a nation that's on the demise. Continuing on here. GOP aides say new Patriot Act obliges Bush. The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee is working on a bill that would renew the Patriot Act and expand government powers in the name of fighting terrorism, letting the FBI subpoena records without information or without permission from a judge or grand jury. Much of the debate in Congress is concerned possibly limiting some of the powers in the anti-terrorism law passed 45 days after the attacks of September 11, 2001. But the measure being written by Senator Pat Roberts, a Republican from Kansas, would give the FBI new power to issue administrative subpoenas, which are not reviewed by a judge or grand jury for quickly obtaining records, electronic data, or other evidence in terrorism investigations, according to aides for the GOP majority on the committee who briefed reporters Wednesday. Recipients could challenge the subpoenas in court. Well, what good is that going to do? Did Terry Schiavo have any justice in the courts? I mean, we got a bunch of corrupt courts here. The courts are not viable avenues for redress of grievances anymore. But they say recipients could challenge the subpoenas in court, and the Bush administration would have to report to Congress. Oh, but doesn't that make you feel better? That Bush would be accountable to Congress twice a year. Exactly how it was using this investigatory power. Well, the bottom line is the Patriot Act being pushed. Information for decision making, Chapter 40 of Agenda 21, being implemented, as with the RFID chips, the barcodes, tracking everywhere you go, watching every move you make. It's all a part of the globalist system. Here we see the United Nations mulls the protection of Earth's forests. This is from Indiana University. A news release. The final meeting of the United Nations Forum on Forests, which, by the way, folks, is going on right now, could result in firm commitments to protect the world's forests, or some environmentalists worry, merely an agreement to continue negotiations. One member of the U.S. delegation to the United Nations Forum is international environmental policy expert Matthew Eyre, who remains guardedly optimistic that the two-week negotiation will conclude with one or more concrete outcomes, such as a fund to help international organizations and continues protect the world's forests. I'm sorry, countries. International organizations and countries protect the world's forests. The forum is scheduled to meet May 16th through the 27th at United Nations headquarters in Manhattan. Eyre, who's an associate professor in Indiana's University's School of Public and Environmental Affairs, he said, quote, "At the international level, there's been much stalemate and disagreement on the issues of forest protection and management. Since the late 1980s, countries have periodically debated the pluses and minuses of having a legal convention. But there are even better options available that are easier to agree on and implement," unquote. He continued by saying that the United States and a few other countries are unlikely to sign a legally binding convention. Well, let's hope that is the case. But folks, I just want to point this out again, that what good, and then of course this connects also to Agenda 21, as Chapter 11 in Agenda 21 deals with combating deforestation. And what good is it going to do to combat deforestation? We have the U.S. government right now chopping down trees and sending them over to Iraq to rebuild, or actually to board up buildings, according to my father, who is down in logging country, so he knows, he's well acquainted with this. They're chopping down the forests and sending them over to the Middle East. And we're going to be sending them off to Asia to help rebuild the tsunami region. What's going to happen when these forests are devastated? This looks to me like an Hegelian dialectic situation, folks. So they're going to turn around and blame your development for the deforestation that's going on and use that as a pretense for more control, more restrictions to be put upon you. We're almost at the halfway point of the broadcast, and I'm just getting started. We got more to cover on the way, ladies and gentlemen. I've got information about how the Utah desert is blooming. I got information on wind farms from the BBC, more implementation of Agenda 21, and the Kyoto Protocol in Britain as it struggles to meet the standards. We have mayors here in the United States trying to get us into the Kyoto Treaty. We have climate talks on the successor to the Kyoto Protocol, which will have to be implemented in 2012 as the Kyoto Protocol expires in 2012. So they're planning way ahead for us. We have the NOAA. NOAA is predicting now that three hurricanes will hit the U.S. They're saying it's going to be a very active hurricane season. They say it's because of global warming and because we have warmer seas. I say it's a load of hogwash, but we got a lot more stuff on the other side of the break, so I hope you'll stay with us as we continue here. You're listening to American Exposé. The website for American Exposé is AmericanExposé.com, spelled with a K, AmericanExposé.com. Stay with us. More to come on the other side of the break.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. Are you a believer that is looking for a way to understand Bible prophecy as it pertains to historic as well as current events? Do you believe a one-world government is predicted in the Bible to occur in our day? Do you want to know what the Bible says about the Vatican's role in all of this? Are you one that believes no prophecy of the Bible is of any personal interpretation, as 2 Peter 1:20 declares? And are you also one that understands all the symbols in prophecy are defined accurately in all the books of the Bible? If so, then you are one that would be blessed by the truth provided broadcast. Please join us on Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for an adventure in Bible prophecy. See the prophecies of old come to light in today's current events as well as historic events in our not-so-distant past. You will find information in this broadcast that will benefit you and your family like never before. So please stop by Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on FirstAmendmentRadio.com for the Truth Provided broadcast. For more information, stop by our website at www.remnantofgod.org.
Comes the hurricanes.
I hear hurricanes blowing.
We're all gonna die. Hey, it's part of the global superstorm.
I hear the voice of rage and ruin.
like in the movie, The Day After Tomorrow. Well, the doom and gloomers have already surfaced again. And I'm talking about those at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. They're already predicting that two or three hurricanes are going to hit the U.S. this year. It's going to be a really bad hurricane season. Now, James McCanney, who is a guy who he studies these things for a living. He's a scientist. He used to be a professor, and I forget what institution he used to be on, a faculty member of. But at any rate, he's saying that he doesn't see this based upon what he sees in the ocean temperature and everything and all of the things that go on studying this. He doesn't see it's going to be a bad hurricane season. So the question is, if it really is going to be a bad hurricane season, is it going to be a natural phenomenon or is it going to be through artificial climate modification? And that's the problem that you have, knowing whether these things are natural or whether they're man-made. As we've documented many times, that this thing is a reality, that this thing goes on. And, well, it says from CNN, it says the nation's weather agency predicted two or three hurricanes could hit the United States this year based on an Atlantic season forecast released Monday. Overall, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration predicts 7 to 9 hurricanes during the coming season, June 1st to November 30th. Last year, 4 hurricanes slammed the Florida coast, causing scores of deaths and tens of billions of dollars in damage. Conrad Lautenbacher, who is with NOAA, says it is difficult to make any kind of an accurate prediction on how many of these will strike land. But I think statistically, you can look at the fact that when seasons are more active and we have higher levels of hurricanes, you have a high chance of hurricanes striking the United States. So I would predict that 2 or 3 perhaps would strike the United States, he said. Now the forecast said 3 of 5 of the hurricanes will be major storms ranked Category 3 or higher on the scale of hurricane strength. NOAA's 2004 forecast, they say, proved to be fairly accurate. In reality, they say 6 hurricanes reached Category 3 when they were predicting that there would be 8 that would reach that level, which Category 3 is 111 to 130 mile per hour winds. I'm not going to recount the history of what happened last year because I think many of you are well aware of it. But the point here is they're already predicting that this is going to be a bad hurricane season, and they're going to what's this going to be blamed on? Well, rising sea temperature levels, which they say are caused by global warming. Okay? What's global warming caused by? Well, in all actuality, it's more than likely a natural occurrence. It's more than likely something because the Earth goes through heating and cooling cycles, and that's just the reality of it. But that doesn't fit into the template of the agenda, folks. So what they're going to say is that you're causing it because you're driving your SUVs, you're heating your house, you're using electricity. In other words, you're living your life, and you're cutting down trees, you're using paper to cut down trees, various things that you're doing through the course of your existence that you need to quit doing and be more sustainable. And now we have the UK, who's signed on and ratified the Kyoto Treaty. They're trying to put up windmills. The BBC reports that wind farms must take root in the UK. Wind power must be made to work in the UK in order to combat climate change, a report by the Sustainable Development Commission has said. The report maintains it is possible to meet the government's target to have renewables provide 10% of the UK's electricity by 2010. If wind farms take off, they say, that figure may rise to 20% by 2020. wind farms. What a joke. When we got a lot more efficient means of producing power, and it wouldn't have any negative effect on the environment whatsoever. But see, it's about control. That's what it's all about. And now we have a group of mayors here in the United States. Here we see mayors back global warming pact. Coalition supports Kyoto Treaty opposed by White House. Now, does the White House really oppose it? Think about that for a second. The Kyoto Protocol, the Kyoto Treaty, is a worldwide agreement which implements the UN system. We have the White House engaging in various activities around the world, in wars and various other things that help to implement the United Nations system and set up governments that the UN can control. Is the Bush administration really against the Kyoto Treaty, which puts the UN in charge? Of course not. This is just another look-good move so that Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and the other neocons can point to this and say, oh, look, Bush isn't a globalist. He's a good guy. Hogwash. But this piece, Mayors Back Global Warming Pact, Coalition Supports Kyoto Treaty Opposed by White House, says, despite the Bush administration's resistance to the Kyoto Global Warming Pact, more than 130 U.S. mayors have applied the agreement's standards in a bid to reduce America's carbon dioxide emissions, Seattle Mayor Greg Nickels said Monday. So here we have the mayors implementing the Kyoto Protocol, or trying to anyway. Concerned by several warm winter days in his own city, Nickels said he appealed to mayors across the country in February when the global treaty was enacted without the participation of the United States, the largest emitter of heat-trapping gases. Uh-huh. Since then, Nickels said, 136 mayors representing more than 30 million people have signed an agreement to meet the goals spelled out in the treaty and are urging the federal government to do the same. Nickels, a Democrat, said, quote, we've seen what the potential effect might have been in Florida with the hurricanes and in California with the record rainfall that usually belongs to us. Those are warning signs, he says. They may or may not be related to global climate change. Aha! But they are a sign of what might happen. Well, see, the point is, that's all speculation. There's no scientific proof, ladies and gentlemen. I know I sound like a broken record when I say it, but I have to keep saying it, because you're not going to hear it from the controlled media. There's no scientific proof linking human activity with global climate change. Period. Is the Earth warming up? Well, probably. Because the Earth normally does warm up in cycles. And then it goes through cooling cycles. And apparently we must be going through a warming cycle. But Senator James Inhofe, who chairs an environmental committee, he says that the Kyoto Protocol, restricting these greenhouse gases, it's going to devastate the American economy, and it's not going to have any noticeable effect on the temperature of the Earth. Period. And this is a guy who studies these issues every single day. He chairs the Environmental Committee. Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma. He ought to know what he's talking about. So don't believe me, believe him. And believe scientists like James McCain, who, by the way, we're going to have on this broadcast very soon. I've already talked to him. He's willing to come on. He's willing to discuss these issues with you. With us, so we're going to have him on very soon, Lord willing. But participating mayors in this whole agreement supporting the Global Warming Treaty of Kyoto include Michael Bloomberg of New York, of course, and James Hahn of Los Angeles. The Kyoto Protocol, adopted in the Japanese city of 1997, imposes requirements on 35 industrialized nations to cut emissions of greenhouse gases blamed for rising world temperatures to an average of 5% below the 1990 levels. The treaty has been ratified by at least 140 nations, but the United States has said the restrictions are flawed and could hurt its economy. No, it couldn't. It's not could, it would, folks. We don't have much of an economy left now, but the mayors involved pledged to meet or beat Kyoto targets, such as reduction in greenhouse gas emissions of 7% from 1990 levels by 2012. Recommended actions range from anti-sprawl land use policies to public information campaigns. Seattle aims to meet its 7% commitment in part by encouraging cruise lines to turn off their diesel engines when they dock at its port and hook up to the city's electrical power grid. Absolutely amazing. Unbelievable. They're already making plans, by the way, for the successor of Kyoto. Climate talks have already started to hunt for the Kyoto successor. The Kyoto Protocol expires in 2012. A UN meeting took a tiny first step on Monday, and this is a piece dated, it's this past week anyway, so that would be this past Monday. They took a first step Monday, the UN did, towards finding a successor to the Kyoto Protocol on global warming, with calls for the United States and developing nations to take part after 2012. These people just don't give up. But India, China, and Brazil told rich nations to do more to keep promises of cuts in their own emissions of heat-trapping gases before trying to widen the accord. They also urged the rich to provide more aid in non-polluting energy technologies. Don't you all just feel like you should provide more aid? I mean, don't you just feel like that you're just not doing enough already? German Environment Minister Jürgen Tritten said at the opening of the two-day seminar of experts from 190 nations, he said, "We need common solutions for the most serious environmental challenge of our time. Climate change is already a harsh reality." A harsh reality that we can't do anything about, mister. He continued, though. He says, "Climate protection must not end in 2012. Companies and investors want to plan beyond 2012. Kyoto entered into force on February 16th after years of delays and weakened by a pullout of the United States, the world's top polluter." Oh, you demons out there. "The informal Bonn seminar is a first step to start considering what to do after it runs out in 2012. Under Kyoto, rich nations are meant to cut emissions of heat-trapping gases from power plants, cars, and factories by 5.2% below 1990 levels by 2008 to 2012, or 2012, to try to slow what many scientists say could be catastrophic climate changes." Argentine Environment Minister Gaines Gonzalez Garcia said, "This is a global problem. We can't let the United States stay out." Well, Mr. Garcia, you have no choice. "Australia and the other main outsider must also join," he said. Well, I'm going to leave that there because we've covered Kyoto in the past. We'll cover it in the future, I'm sure. But all of this sky is falling nonsense of these globalists to try to cripple the U.S. economy. And again, the parallels to Agenda 21 are there. Because under Agenda 21, it's the largest socialist system ever. Redistribution of wealth, transfer of technology. The United States has to build infrastructure in developing countries. Everything goes to the developing countries, while developed countries have to pony up and spend themselves broke. And then they're expected to destroy their economies, what's left, by cutting industry because they are polluting too much. And here we have a different approach, a different look at this whole pollution factor. This is from Purdue University, and it says atmosphere may cleanse itself better than previously thought. Now, you're not going to hear this reported in the media, I guarantee you. But they say a research team from Purdue University and the University of California, San Diego has found that the Earth's temperature, or the Earth's atmosphere, rather, may be more effective at cleansing itself of smog and other damaging hydrocarbons than was once thought. Scientists including Joseph S. Francisco have learned that some naturally occurring atmospheric chemicals react with sunlight more effectively than previously thought to produce substances that scrub the air of smog. This group of chemicals, after absorbing energy from sunlight, is able to break down smog and other pollutants into far less harmful components. While many such chemicals have long been known to behave in this way, producing natural air cleaners called OH radicals, the chemicals the team studied have for the first time been observed to produce air-scrubbing OH radicals at low ultraviolet wavelengths. This observation has eluded science primarily because photochemistry at these wavelengths has been difficult to study. He says, this is Francisco, who is a professor of both earth and atmospheric sciences at chemistry in Purdue's College of Science. He says, thanks to an innovative laser technique that at last allows us to observe these chemicals in action, we now theorize that the atmosphere may produce up to 20% more OH radicals from these chemicals than we once thought. We now have a better understanding of an atmospheric process that could be giving our pollution-weary lungs more breathing room. You see, folks, the bottom line is all of this gloom and doom that we're hearing all of the time is just nothing but a bunch of propaganda. Those of us who believe in God understand that God created this earth. And as such, don't you think that He's smart enough to be able to plan for all of the things that we human beings might do when we're here? I mean, don't you think the earth isn't as fragile as we're being led to believe that it is? And this is just more evidence of that. Atmosphere may cleanse itself better than previously thought. Francisco's research, which he performed at the University of California, San Diego, with two of that institution's scientists, lead author Amitabha Sinha and graduate student Jamie Matthews, appears in this week's only online edition of the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It will appear in the print edition on May 24th. Much air pollution consists of chemicals called hydrocarbons, and these are what they're saying is causing global warming, and they're produced by burning of organic matters such as wood or fossil fuels. The atmosphere has three main ways to cleanse itself of such pollutants, two of which are relatively direct. Either water droplets in clouds absorb them and rain them out, or sunlight strikes them and the energy breaks the molecules apart. Francisco said, quote, "The third way is the one we are concerned with here, the way that involves breaking these hydrocarbons down chemically. For that, the atmosphere relies on a reactive group of chemicals called OH radicals that attract themselves to hydrocarbons and rip them into inert pieces." Unquote. OH radicals arise naturally from many atmospheric constituents, and the effect they have on pollution has long been factored into models that describe the atmosphere and attempt to predict how it will react to increasing quantities of hydrocarbon pollutants, which generate smog. But these models do not always function well, Francisco said, in part because OH radicals are in some ways an unknown quantity. He says one of the biggest questions in our field concerns the amount of OH radicals the atmosphere holds. It's tough to get a handle on them because they are so reactive, which means they vanish fast, and also because we don't have complete knowledge of all sources that produce them yet, unquote. These experiments, which Sina and Matthews performed at UCSD, use a laser technique that allow the team to look at the OH radical-producing molecules in a new way. More precisely, it allowed the researchers to observe a portion of the spectrum that the molecules absorb, a portion that has been something of a blind spot for scientists, who often detect chemical reactions by perceiving the telltale light frequencies that certain reactions are known to emit or absorb. Many sources of OH radicals strongly absorb UV light, making them easily detectable. However, the weak absorptions in the lower region of the ultraviolet spectrum, from wavelengths of about 360 nanometers to 630 nanometers, has been more challenging. Francisco says, quote, "It's usually difficult to detect what's going on in that spectral region because the molecular systems of interest frequently have weak spectral features, so they're tough to see. The upshot is that a lot of atmospheric models ignore this region altogether, assuming that because nothing can be seen, nothing must be happening," unquote. The laser technique, however, enabled the team to characterize the minute quantities of radiation absorbed by a substance called methyl hydroperoxide when it breaks up in sunlight and forms OH radicals. Methyl hydroperoxide is one of the substances that can absorb light in the lower UV spectrum, and the team theorizes that the sensitive laser technique called action spectroscopy could reveal OH radical production from other chemically related molecules as well. Sina said, quote, "This study is important because it shows that the atmosphere could be generating far more OH radicals than we thought before, because the models are underestimating the amount of chemistry that's happening. It could imply that the atmosphere is more effective at breaking down pollution than models have shown." Did you hear that, folks? It says it could imply that the atmosphere is more effective at breaking down pollution than models have shown. We hope the results will improve our understanding of how the atmosphere works. Now, while he cautioned that the results do not mean that we can safely ignore atmospheric pollution, he says what it means is that we need to do a much more careful job with our measurements in order to accurately account for all the reactive chemicals present in the air. He says, "Models are only as good as the information we put into them, and we must always keep a cautious perspective about the results models return." A cautious perspective about the results models return. You see, all we have today is all of this alarmism, and it's all based on models. And garbage in, garbage out, ladies and gentlemen. He continued by saying, "Sometimes things are happening that you can't see using standard methods. Now we hope to make this improved understanding of the atmosphere and include it in future models. That's the next step." The question is, will you folks ever hear about improved models? We're almost out of time here. I had some information I wanted to share about rewilding, and it doesn't look like we're going to get to much of that. We see feds are restricting off-road vehicles in the West. Reno, Nevada, for decades, off-road vehicle enthusiasts have been mostly free to roam federal forests and rangelands. Those freewheeling days, however, could soon be numbered. Two government agencies, the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, are developing plans to restrict the vehicles to designate routes as part of an effort to curb environmental damage and ease conflict among users of public lands. Leo Drum, off-highway vehicle coordinator for the Nevada Bureau of Land Management, says, quote, "The days of blazing new trails are coming to an end. There has to be some controls. Unquote. While efforts to address off-road travel are underway across the West, any changes probably would have the biggest impact on Nevada and its wide open spaces, including the 6.3 million acre Humboldt-Toyabe National Forest, the largest national forest outside Alaska. Now listen to this, folks. The federal government controls 87% of the state's land. I want to say that again. We're talking about Nevada here, but there's other states as well that are just in the same situation. And people, we still think we live in a free country when the federal government controls 87% of the state of Nevada's land. Now I want to ask you something. Without private property rights, without the ability to own and control land, without the ability to have the means of production, which is the land, what freedoms do you have? Without that, folks, you have nothing. And that's why I'm always ranting and raving about it. The federal government controls 87% of the state's land, and the vast majority of the country is unrestricted to off-roaders. Although the Forest Service national policy on off-roading awaits final action nearly a year after it was unveiled, individual natural forests such as the Humboldt-Toyabe are being encouraged to address the issue because of soaring off-road vehicle. Bob Vaught, supervisor of Humboldt-Toyabe, said, quote, "We're all recognizing at the same time that we need to work on this issue. There's widespread agreement that we need to do a better job of managing off-highway vehicle use." Well, we don't have any more time, ladies and gentlemen, but it's important to learn all we can and do all we can to preserve what we have left, because we're losing it quickly, unfortunately. But we have hope. There are things that we can do. Spread this word. Do what you can to restore this republic. Join me Monday. I will have Stephen Jacobson on, and we'll talk about mind control some. God bless you, and folks, have a good weekend. Good night.
That's the sound of nearly 3 million American jobs being flushed down the toilet. What caused it? NAFTA. 10 years ago, Congress passed NAFTA. It was supposed to